Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ saṅghaṃ namassāmi. Yesterday, Ajahn Amaro was doing some preparation for the tomorrow's Vasika day, and we're going over some of the material. And I was trying to track down a particular set of teachings that are called the protective meditations, four protective meditations, part of it will probably be speaking about tomorrow. But they're interesting meditations because they're called protective meditations, and they're both for, some of them are for, you have a sort of protective quality, and the other is in terms of protecting the meditation or protecting one's spiritual growth. And the first one is the recollection of the Buddha. Second one is meditations on loving kindness. The third one is recollections on the unattractiveness of the body, and the fourth is mindfulness of death. So that these are meditations that are useful for bringing up themes for recollection, reflection, investigation, and being able to use the, on a certain level, the discursive ability of the mind to be considering things that help to clarify intention, bring up wholesome qualities in the mind. Because it's important to be considering that. Oftentimes we think of meditation as just trying to stop the mind, trying to make the mind peaceful, trying to just trying to get the mind to shut up somehow, or just trying to keep the mind from moving too much, that concern of the that we shouldn't be thinking, having anything come up in the mind. And that's not really a complete picture, because we actually have to learn how to use that discursive, investigative thought process in a skillful way. Otherwise, when we can sort of keep the mind in check, then we'll feel peaceful. That's not possible all the time, and not necessarily even a good thing. Because again, we really do need to learn how to use the mind that does think, reflect, in order to investigate, contemplate. So being able to consciously bring up recollections help to create a sense of balance in the mind, so that this, say the, and the both of those, I mean, there's two of them, tend to be qualities that bring up qualities of faith, devotion, very positive qualities, will tend to kind of invigorate the mind in a sense of ease, and so those are the recollections of the Buddha and loving kindness, recollections of loving kindness, whereas say the unattractiveness of the body, mindfulness of death, those are recollections that will help us to sometimes rein in the mind. The mind is starting to get engrossed in the world, engrossed in things which are unskillful, and engrossed in infatuation, desire. So then there's that recollection of the unattractive of the body, the sense of going through 32 parts of the body, or the body in its perceiving it in terms of elements as opposed to just physical form and as a vehicle for the gratification of desire. Recollections of death bring up a sense of urgency, bring up a sense of not wanting to waste time, not wanting to get entangled or caught up in things which are really extraneous, not that useful at all. And so those are the recollections, reflections that are helpful for balancing the mind, balancing the heart. There's your, you can have a base line meditation, say of or a particular method, a mindfulness of breathing or whatever meditation one is doing or feels comfortable with, but it's always helpful to have tools to be able to fine-tune the mind, encourage the mind in skillful ways. And so that these, that using the reflective process, using the recollect, ability to recollect. And that's also the word that's usually translated as mindfulness. Its primary meaning is actually around memory, recollection, being able to recollect, being able to remember. So being able to remember that which is wholesome, being able to remember that which is skillful, being able to remember that which encourages us in ways that are going to establish a sense of ease or clarity, sense of contentment, of satisfaction. These are all essential parts of practice, of training. So to have the tools to work with that, rather than just blindly plugging away at a particular meditation technique, or somehow thinking that if I put the hours onto the cushion, then I'm somehow going to magically transform into a liberated being. We need to be able to work with the mind. We need to have to work with our own difficulties or our own tendencies, our own habits, our own conditioning, and learn how to balance these and learn how to and recognize that it changes. Sometimes, the mind gets swept up in you know, particular, you know, desires and fantasies. And at other times, the whole realm of desire and infatuation is completely missing. What's there, what's it replaced by is sort of irritation and aversion. This complete sense of irritation with the world, the people around. So learning how to balance those things, having the tools to do it with. Now that as recollections of the Buddha, being able to recollect the qualities that the Buddha embodies and is an exemplar of, qualities of wisdom, compassion, purity. Those are when we do our chant, like our evening chanting, morning chanting. Those are the primary qualities that are being pointed to. Just when we say, just the opening closing homage, Arahang Samma Sambuddho Bhagava. You know, those are, you know, we think of, you know, the Arahant, to say the perfectly awakened, free from defilement. The Bhagava, the Blessed One. Those are. I mean, they sometimes it doesn't matter what language. I mean, they tend to be words that you that roll off the tongue. You get used to them. We chant them, but they're pointing to particular qualities. And say that which is, say, wisdom is that quality, the ability to have been fully awakened. That ability that is dependent on wisdom. The Bhagava, the Blessed One, is one who has compassion for the world, brings blessings wherever he is. Quality of purity, being able to be far from defilement, free of the tendencies to be stuck in greed, hatred, and delusion. So those qualities are not just qualities of the Buddha, but they're qualities that we ourselves can also cultivate and develop and live according to, so that it's encouraging ourselves, reflecting on the historical Buddha, the examples that the Buddha himself set in his, you know, all of the discourses and the Vinaya, the Book of Discipline, the many, many stories of the Buddha's life, and they point to qualities that are always very human, that we can also cultivate, encourage ourselves with. Say, what pops into my mind right now is, say the story of the Buddha when he's going for a walk around the monastery in the Jetavana and Savati, and he's with Ananda just sort of checking out how things are. It's a large monastery, going for a walk, seeing how things are, and comes across a dwelling place where one of the monks is very, very sick with dysentery, and he's been so ill and sick and weak that he hasn't been able to even get up off his bed and has soiled himself. And the Buddha goes and sees him, you know, what's happened, and very concerned, and immediately has Ananda help, and they take and carry him out, clean up his, clean him up, look after him, clean up his place, bring him back. And it's after that that the Buddha calls the community together, admonishes the monks for not looking after a member of the Sangha. Say to you know, you have to look after each other. You've left the world. You don't have family in the same way that people in the world do. You have to be your own family. You have to look after each other. That you know, very human, very caring. Sometimes in later commentarial traditions and later traditions, the Buddha becomes the cosmic being who's sort of emanating rays of light all the time, and it's hard to relate to something like that as human. In the Pali tradition, the Buddha is a very real person, and has cultivated these qualities over many lifetimes, and sets the example, sets the encouragement for everybody else, that it's possible for others to do the same thing. So it's a way to encourage ourselves. Metta, bhavana, the meditations on loving kindness, these are always given as a direct antidote to anger and ill will, to be able to directly counter the tendency to aversion by consciously bringing up loving kindness, consciously putting attention at that, cultivating the heart of loving kindness, putting that as a central intention, and it undermines that tendency and habit to aversion, to anger, to ill will, and negativity. So that to be able to make that a part of one's practice, and depending on our own temperaments, our own sort of personal history, then we need to make more of it or to keep it in the background as a skillful tool, or to really make it a central part of our practice. Certainly in terms of traditional meditation instructions, when the meditation masters of old would give instruction on how to begin a meditation, invariably they would encourage the establishing of loving kindness before even starting a meditation, as an integral part of creating that wholesome intention and wholesome quality of mind. Because the mind is only going to become peaceful when it is able to establish itself consistently in wholesome qualities, in wholesome mental states. It's sort of an intrinsic part of a negative mind state, an unwholesome mental state, that it is not peaceful. It's intrinsic, it's sort of part of nature. In the same way that when the wind blows, the leaves flutter, the water ripples if it's out in the open. It's intrinsic to nature, so that when an unwholesome mental state blows through the mind is not steady. As we are able to establish those wholesome qualities of mind, intrinsic to those wholesome qualities is a steadiness, is a peacefulness. There's a a certain element of tranquility that is intrinsic to those wholesome qualities. So that to consciously put attention on loving kindness. And there are many different ways of developing that. Tomorrow is the Upasika day, and it's going to be mostly focused around loving kindness, metta, bhavana, metta meditation. So stay tuned for tomorrow. The meditation recollection of the unattractiveness of the body. It's so ordinary to be equating the body as a vehicle for happiness, pleasure, satisfaction. Whether it's in food, drink, activity, sensuality, sexuality, the body is the central vehicle for gaining pleasure. And to be able to look at that from another perspective and say, well, what is the nature of this body? What is it like? And by taking it into its component parts, it starts to break away the kind of the mystique of the kind of the natural pull towards pleasure, beauty, attractiveness. Because the nature of attraction is, I mean, it can just tune out anything that isn't and doesn't fit with one's image of what one's is hoping, because the mind has already set up a hope. Wow, I'm gonna get something out of this. So it tunes everything else out. But so to bring up those reflections on the nature of the body, hair of the head, hair of the body, nails, teeth, and skin. Those are the first five recollections of the 32 parts of the body, and they're just looking at, say, just what we see of a body, which normally we go into the, you know, either attractive, unattractive, all the characteristics, but in the end, it's a hair of the head, hair of the body, nails, teeth, and skin. And by looking at it from that perspective, it helps to just deflect that and put a question mark around the impulse to desire, the impulse to attraction. The Buddha is not making a value judgment on it in the sense of it's bad or it's off. It's just sort of being able to come at it from a different perspective. And say in the Satipatthana Sutta, the Sutta on the establishing of mindfulness, recollection, the mindfulness of the body, the Buddha points to the recollections of the 32 parts of the body in the same way that one, say, when one looks at the body as hair of the head, hair of the body, nails, teeth, skin, flesh, sinews, bone marrow, goes all through the 32 parts. Sort of in the same way that one would look at a bag of grains and look at it and say, you know, this is hill rice, this is paddy rice, this is sticky rice, these are green beans, those are yellow, those are dal beans, those are this. And it's like, in the same way, one sees the unattractive nature of the body. So it isn't unattractive in the sense of, awful, nasty or anything, but it's like unattractive in that it's no big deal. It's just, well, that's like that's husked rice. This is white rice. This is brown rice. You know, it's no big deal. It's just that nature. So to be able to bring that perception and recollection into the mind has this extraordinarily cooling quality to the mind, and it's a and again these are methods and techniques to help balance the mind. You're using them when it's appropriate, bringing it to bear on the mind, so that one can be relinquishing or stepping back from that impulse to gratification at any cost. Recollections of death, being able to bring up the reality of death. It's like I was like Ajahn Amaro saying today we're talking about somebody was like having the it was just sort of being afflicted with the illness of mortality. It's just this, that's having been born, having a physical body, it's just we're carrying it with us. And it's just a matter of when. Does death come when we're young, when we're middle aged, when we're old? How does it come? It's like there's, if you buy some appliance or a vehicle, I mean, you get some kind of warranty with it. And with these bodies, we don't get a warranty. I mean, it's so unsure, it's uncertain. So that death is always it's always there. It's just the nature of having been born. So to be able to bring that up as a recollection, a reflection, and that helps to encourage the mind not to waste time. We've got this opportunity to hear Dhamma, study Dhamma, practice Dhamma, cultivate those qualities which are wholesome and skillful. Not to let time go by. It's like one of the recollections that's given, encouraged by the Buddha, for one who's gone forth, and then one of them is the days and nights are relentlessly passing. How well am I spending my time? It's very skillful to bring that up, and knowing that sort of death is you've got to keep it on the page, keep it on the screen. Don't let it drop off. Because we tend to get complacent, tend to drift very easily. You know, why do something today when you can put it off till tomorrow? It's so much the part of the human condition. But our spiritual practice, our investigation, our sort of reflection has to be done in the present, here and now. So that mindfulness, recollection of death is very helpful. And one of the things it tends to do is help us to put forth effort. So that there's these different reflections, recollections that are helpful in practice and in our daily lives, to learning how to use them, bring them up and in for this balancing and encouraging ourselves. I'll offer that for reflection this evening.
Hamadayam namatak anakataya sadhu karam gadamase.